That's New Era.
Mm-hmm.
That's upstairs in the New Era.
That's right, yeah.
Wow. All right.
Martin Bartlett and Sonia and Mo Van Nostrum.
Right. Martin, he... My stepmother, Barbara Pentland, taught him music, and she finally gave up on him.
Oh, is that right?
And she said, no, I can't teach you. You're just, you know, you're just too out of it. And then, you know, you have to go away. And after he went, she said, oh, he's probably going to be the next thing, you know, because I can't stand him. The first time I heard Al playing the piano, I was being a, I was taking a sculpture course at UBC. I was 18 years old, and we had a sort of end of summer session party, and this guy came over, you know, and everyone was going, woo, 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 and he was playing, and here he was playing the piano, and that was my first... first glimpse of him was it in 1958.
So he played by himself?
He was a jazz pianist.
Right.
And solo jazz pianist.
And he was not playing the kind of music that he became known for.
No, not what he was performing in the 60s and 70s, but you know, most of us were into jazz a more, you know, it wasn't a dancing thing.
Right.
Nobody
right.
was dancing, but you know, it was. Nonetheless, it was.
So you were into jazz. So you were at art school. Was that art school that you were at, or
no?
What?
I was at UBC.
I
ended up at UBC. It took a sense. I wanted to go to art school, but my father told me that nobody could make a living doing that, and therefore I had to first prove that I could make a living. And so he made me go to UBC. I took a BA in psychology, sociology, and I had one course short of a theater major. And then I took teacher training for a year and ended up as a primary school teacher, which I lasted for 3 years. I had a nervous breakdown. I mean, it was terrible. I was teaching. First of all, I didn't have a teaching subject. Second of all, I was teaching spelling, and I couldn't spell. I'm dyslexic. Mm. Well, Toffler finally explained it to me, that school isn't about learning. School is about getting there on time, doing boring jobs, you know, and being obedient. And I didn't realize that, so I let my kids wander around. I made sure that they, you know, were actually learning something, and I was driving myself crazy, spending all night trying to make things more individual for different abilities and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I couldn't handle it. 65, 66. I had a store on 4th Avenue, and I had a giant frog which I had made out of fiberglass. It's the size of a human being out front and I was called the Golden Eye, because the frog had a golden eye. At least a red-legged frog has a golden eye. And I just sold crafts and plastic earrings and candles and stuff like that. But for some reason or another, I became the draft dodger, the mecca. And so these young people, young Americans running from the draft, I guess because it was such an easy thing to tell people to go find, they would all come into my store and say, where do I go? So I found out where they went, and I would put them in the back of my store, phone the people who really knew what was happening, and they would come and get them. So I ended up, I sort of felt that that was okay. That's what I did during the Vietnam War.
You were the Underground Railway.
I was part of the Underground Railway.
Ellen.
Ellen. I danced with her, and I actually started dancing with her when I was going to UBC. She got to teach a gym class, and the gym class was a dance class, and she started us dancing. And then after I graduated and went on with my life, she was continuing on. She had a thing on down on Seymour Street in a studio, and I would go down there and every once a week, I guess, and join them all, and we would do exercises, and then we would dance. And then later on, if she needed dancers for something, I remember doing something in the art gallery once, you know, that I'd get a phone call and I'd turn up and I would do what I was told. Yeah, so actually I danced with her for 6 years or something like that. It was a fairly long time. She was my, you know, that she was a major influence with a whole group of girls, Judy Copperthorne and Maxine Gadd are the two I remember, but there were a bunch of us, and some of them remember or remind me that they were part of that group, but I, you know, because I didn't keep up contact with them, I didn't remember so much. And we would actually go to dances as a group and carry on with this, with our abstract dancing, you know, as a group until... at a certain point, it tipped again. It used to be we could do this because everyone was sort of dancing around. And then we got at this dance one day and everyone was in couples. And so, you know, we actually did something and some people joined us, but then we realized it was over. You know, they'd gone back to slow dancing.
So what kind of dances were these, and where were they? Like, would they be at clubs?
Yeah. Yeah. There was one on Davie Street. There was one on 4th Avenue. There was... they were just in various places. Yeah, they were... And I can't even remember their names, but they had, you know, they were very... Yeah. But Helen actually was a great influence on a lot of young women, or my age women, when it was quite a tragedy, actually, when she decided that she didn't want to carry on. And, you know, like, in, I guess a lot of, and none of us really sort of recognized it because we just sort of looked up to her. We just sort of saw her as the goddess. And actually, that was very shocking, you know, that to see that she had had problems that none of us knew about, and, you know, none of us were reached out or nothing, you know. There was no... You know, like we all appreciated what she did for us, but we never, I felt badly that we weren't able to reach back. You know, she influenced us and we weren't, you know, and off she went.
Well, she had a sort of a parent role, so, and parents are notoriously absent emotionally from the relationship oftentimes, right? Because the child takes precedent. I mean, it's not working that way.
Yeah, we aren't. We don't know. It's really late in life that we realize that there,
mother,
there's
for
a reverse.
Instance. Exactly. Yeah.
That they're actually a person.
Yeah.
You know, you have to deal with that too.
Yeah. Well, I was teaching at UBC when just before she died or took her life, and I had sort of brought her back into the world of performance because I was working with a group of students who wanted to take part in the performance festival that was happening in Vancouver, and we went to her and asked her to come and, you know, help us prepare a performance, and so we were kind of working together for a few months before that, and I guess she was looking after her husband Michael, who was dying of cancer, and her son had already died. You know, things that happened had stacked up in her life that, you know, she just couldn't deal with and didn't want to anymore. So, yeah, that was that.
Yeah, well, you see, I didn't know that. I mean, I sort of probably didn't, you know, wasn't there enough to know it, you know.
Oh, here you are. I think you're in this. Is this you? Yes, this is you. Dancing with Helen.
All right. So was this at the art gallery? Yeah. So this is the one where I turned up. I had no
electrical
idea.
Electrical connection.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, I remember that name now.
You were saying?
But,
you...
Oh, I just turned up and did what I was told.
Uh huh.
You know.
Oh, so Helen would have called you and.
Somebody called me and said, "We need bodies." So I said, "Okay, here I am. I'm in town this week." So I was still out of town, basically. Oh, and I remember her, too, but I've seen her recently. God.
Her name is Rita.
Well, there you go. Like I said, that we were just bodies, you know, or I turned up as a body, you see, but a body who was given instructions to be, at a certain point, attracted to the other dancers. We were dancing on a grid, and so we moved on this grid, and we were told at certain points we were repelled by everything. We were repelled by the other person. Maybe there was a bell that changed it. I think maybe there was a bell that changed it. And we were repelled by the people in front of us, or we were attracted to the people in front of us, and this bell would say which it would be, you know, so that was a, you know, we were just the bodies. She was the inventor of these instructions. Anyway, there. Oh. That's just. But
and
I,
so what
I,
was
I'm
the...
hoping that someone will actually remember what the real instructions were.
What was
I'm
it?
Just guessing.
You had an idea. You had an inkling of what it was, but.
Oh, we were electricity. We were being atoms, repelled and attracted to each other. Yeah, I think. This group. I seem to recall that Dave Rimmer actually ended up showing over there.
Yes, yeah. A number of people had.
He had this wonderful thing that I've always remembered. It was so wonderful. He had a wooden frame, and behind the wooden frame, he shot onto the thing a picture, which he had taken at Storm Bay, of a single framed an entire day. Of the tide coming in and the tide going out and the clouds coming, the mountains, the light changing, so the mountains rippled in these various purples and blues, and it was just, I just loved it. It was, you know, and it was called The Scene, I believe, or something like that, but it was the most wonderful, complete scenery, you know, Ed Varney did something in a print once that was the only other thing, where he did a print of a mountain and a foreground in the sky, and he merely changed where the light was. He did four in a row, and he changed where the light was. And so this, again, was the scene, but the change of the scene. Mm-hmm. The scene is the same, but the scene is always different.
Right, you know, right.
Those two works, I think, were...
Stuck in your mind.
Yeah, they just really stuck in my mind, and it's a great influence, you know.
So you were thinking of yourself as an artist at the time, or as a dancer, or, you know, what were we doing there?
I'm just an eclectic person. I mean, I'll do anything that's creative and, Yeah, no, I don't think I considered myself a dancer. I considered myself only a dancer in being a helper to Helen. You know, I was capable. I was a capable, physically fit, active person capable of taking instructions from Helen. You know, as far as the dancing went. I think that's sort of where that was. You know, but with...
with the art thing, was this like a... Was intermediate like a... Like,
it was
an education for you?
I mean, no, it was an opportunity to get my hands on equipment that... You see, if you go to the art school, if you go to any school... You get all this equipment to play with. Mm-hmm. But if you're a poor, starving artist, you don't. So to me, it was like that Roneo machine, you know, woo, you know, here, I can do all this stuff, you know. And then I did all those fireworks, you know, with the colored flames mm-hmm. and such. Well, I actually got the colored powders. The only way I could get those colored powders and gunpowder and all that stuff was Glenn actually gave me a requisition from Intermedia for the show that said I was allowed to buy this stuff. Otherwise, nobody would have talked to me. They would have sent me away. They would not have sold me little bits of strontium and little bits of, you know, all the various chemicals that I required for the various colors, you know, with my requisition, I was able to get a hold of things that I couldn't otherwise get a hold of. And, you know, it was just sort of fun. I was having fun.
So where would you have figured all that out? How did you know what to use? How did you start experimenting?
For a long time, I had actually studied. I had a friend who was really into fireworks and rockets and stuff like that. And we used to play blowing things up in fields and stuff like that. And we had books. I had books. I had actually this 20th century formula book or whatever, and I had these old books that I could, we used to look at them up, and so I knew what everything was.
Is this when you were a kid?
No.
When you were playing?
This is when I was a...
So you were playing in fields with people?
I was a 20-year-old kid, yes.
No kidding. So you were attracted to, you know, pyrotechnics.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've always been a pyromaniac. I still take photographs of fire, and I'm still, you know, fires, you know.
Gotta go.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't follow houses on fire, but fireplaces and fire, you know, fire on snow and fire and whatever. I love fire. I love flames. I love the dance and the... You know,
but you hadn't done anything like that in a kind of fine art context before.
No.
No.
So since.
So this was a first yeah. and only.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just see.
I got to run around and do this because there it was. And, you know, that's what I thought of Intermedia as, just sort of an opportunity to get a hold of things to do things with, you know. I was doing photography parallel. But my photography had nothing to do with Intermedia. I figured you were doing Intermedia. I was doing the street. I was doing other things. In fact, you know, like from the time I was very young, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a sculptor. And as I say, my father told me that I couldn't do that. I asked, he rebuilt his house, actually, remarried and rebuilt his house, and asked me what I wanted. I said I wanted a place to sleep and a clear floor so that I could have a studio. And so he gave me a place to sleep and a living room with a white shag rug. So I ended up at university and... struggling through all of that kind of stuff, you know. It's not that I don't enjoy learning things, and it wasn't my I don't, I think, you know, like in those days, you just sort of, he was quite correct. I mean, there were very few things that a woman could do. Mm-hmm. You could be a social worker, a nurse, a teacher. And a waitress, you know, like there was...
don't forget, you could also be a flight attendant.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. You know, so I don't know. It just sort of, there were... I was just blinded by ignorance.
So how did you feel, for instance, being a woman in, you know, amongst... the intermedia people. I guess there were lots of females associated, involved.
Yes, and right. And we all agreed, or most of us agreed, that there were two kinds of women involved. If you really want to get into that subject, there were, this was pure Greer female eunuch. You were either one of the boys, or you were one of the girlfriends. I remember this one friend, this guy spelt it out to me. I made the mistake of sleeping with him. And then he announced that I was now going to be his girlfriend and give up doing anything creative. So there you go. I walked off. But I mean, because I couldn't do that. I mean, I knew even if I wanted to try to do that, I couldn't do that. I mean, I remember Gordon Payne wanted me to do that, and I couldn't do that. Because what I did was I'd try and be really sweet for a while, and then I would just get really bad-tempered. I mean, I would just lose it. So there you go.
Right.
Just realized I couldn't do
play
it.
The game.
Yeah, I couldn't play the game. And, you know, that's why my father and stepmother, I mean, they're just so, you know, like she was a composer. She would not marry. She did not marry till she was 40 mm-hmm. when she met my father, who was, you know, the liberated man. And he insisted that she continue to compose. Everyone else who had ever proposed to her proposed that she give up composing, which was a cute thing to do, and that she, you know, come and be the wife instead. And so my father said, I am so happy. I would like to have a wife who is doing something and et cetera, et cetera. So she was very lucky. But
so you grew up with that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that women weren't equal to men until I was well into my 20s. And finally, after people went like this a few times, I realized it was actually not that I was actually bad or doing anything wrong. I just was the wrong sex and I didn't know my place. And so there you go. Yeah. Those were the days. I'm so happy to see young couples not even getting into that mm-hmm, anymore. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. so wonderful. This is what happened. Is first of all, that Trudeau was in there and they were doing something or another. I had no idea what was going on. I really, you know, totally apolitical. No idea. These guys were doing whatever they were doing. I decided it was interesting. So I was standing on a fence taking pictures of everyone. And these FBI or policemen or something came along and knocked me off the fence. You know, got very aggressive. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, I'm going, you know, so what? You know, what are you guys doing? No, I was just reacting to it as a total, complete, and utter just happening in front of me like theater. I had no idea what was going on. I had no opinion about what was going on. I had no idea why or how or anything. But it looked interesting. There was a bunch of people running around and, you know. And so I took pictures and took sound.
Let's look at this little group here. All working together here, putting their...
Well, it was actually really important with those domes. You all had to
Get it right. If you put one wrong one in, I'm sure, you'd have to take it all apart.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. And also that you couldn't go too far in one.
Right, exactly.
You had to all sort of build it up in, that's why there were so often so many people involved, is because they all had to
go up simultaneously on all sides.
Yeah, okay, there's the girls putting up their domes. This was the girl. Oh, no, it isn't.
Yeah, it is. Sure it is. That's the triangles.
And I did photographs for Maxine's triangles. She chose the images. And what I did was I found a studio, somebody who had a studio with a train going by.
Really?
That had a tray twice the size of your thing. Yeah. Giant tray. And we printed these giant photographs for her dome.
You have to go. I cannot deal with this right now. Please go. Okay, sorry. That's fine. No, don't make it, Julia. I don't want to fight with her.
Right. So anyway, apparently, and then she took it outside and burnt it at the...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because she was mad at me because she figured that I had interfered with her... So much work, you know.
Okay, so tell me this story again. I want to know this story. This is a story about whose dome?
Maxine Gad's dome.
Okay.
Yeah. As far as I was concerned, I just sat there and said, okay, what do you want? She told me what she wanted. I took photographs so that they could be blown up because they were pictures in a magazine or a book or something. And then I went to the studio and stayed up all night, making these giant photographs that could go on this thing. And in the end, she was mad at me. That's me and Maxine.
They weren't quite what she wanted. Right. And maybe she didn't articulate clearly what she wanted either, right?
Well, maybe not, but, what can you do? She pointed. She said, there. I said, there, and she said, yes, there, and I took there. Maybe when it was blown up, it didn't feel, she didn't have the concept of what this would look like this, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. What it would look like as a blown up.
So now this...
Yeah, this one's mine.
So this led to, though, the burning of this dome.
Yeah.
So she decided that because, so you tell me that story.
Yeah. So she just decided she didn't like it. So there you go. I mean, I don't care. I mean, I figured that she probably did it because what the hell do you do with a photographic dome? Whereas I had made mine out of silver mylar. And I had, these are aluminum posts and joined with a bolt there. And this became Storm Bay's sauna for years and years and years. this thing, the silver mylar tape tent part even survived up there after it got delivered up and sat in the salt water for 2 weeks before I got to it. And it lasted. It was beautiful. But what I did with this thing was I had the lights on the inside, and then the lights would be on the outside. So it was hilarious because I would see people crawling around measuring the thing inside. But you see, when you flipped, it was like a one-way mirror. So when the lights went on in the inside and out on the outside, you saw the people inside. And when the lights were the other way around, you saw outside, but you didn't see inside. It was a one-way mirror. The silver mylar was a one-way mirror. So by having these lights flip, we had
So were they arranged? The lights were set so they would flip on and off, simultaneously?
Yeah. So So it was quite hilarious because they were, they would flip. And of course the people would be totally unaware that it had just flipped and they were now in the one-way mirror. You know, you were actually watching them.
So did you have a title for that?
For the thing? No, I didn't. No, I didn't. Now, that isn't that bad? Yeah, I should have had a title for it. I don't think any of us had a title.
No, I don't know. Well, there was the foam dome.
Our girl, then I had the Silver Marlar Dome. Marcia did this absolutely fabulous... leaves and... On wax paper or something, maybe plastics and glue. But anyway, it was sort of like what you do with wax paper and leaves. And she actually made me a lamp in the same technique that I had for years and years and years. So hers was very organic and rich and... But I don't actually see the photo one or the... Or Marcia's.
Marcia's is in here, but I think it's probably a little further on.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's Marcia's, yeah. And there's me. Oh, dear.
Smoking in the gallery.
Oh, God, in those days. I mean, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine even trying, lighting up that people would have guns at your head within seconds?
Uh-huh.
No.
It's true.
But...
Well, this is Marcia's.
This is gorgeous. You see, I love that. You know, it just sort of... It's, you know, like right in the forest, your tropical forest, even though none of those leaves are actually tropical. Just beautiful. All right, there's a Silver Marlar Dome, but you see, it doesn't actually show the thing, that what it actually did. It just sort of...
Wasn't there something about this? There being a bit of a daycare in here too, like that the kids came and could play around in these little women's domes and the women's domes.
Yeah. That's like a lot of us women actually were sort of rolled our eyes and ignored our domes, and I think actually that might have been really part of what Maxine was angry about was that the men got to do the big domes, and then and Glenn Lewis, who was actually very anti-woman, the women can have these, and we were the women, in fact, I know a lot of men who don't actually know that we were separate people. I have people who call me Judy. I know people who just continually call me of whatever name the woman that they happen to know about. They call them all the same name. They were the women.
Right. And there's you and outside. This
opening this
night.
This is me doing the these were the colored flames from this was the gunpowder.
Oh, I see. And tell me what you did.
These are methyl hydrate, and they had different chemicals in them that made them different colors. I can't remember offhand. I had a green one, a yellow one, a red one, and a blue one. And then I had the gunpowder that went off in the middle with a long line to it, because actually I burnt my hand trying it out one time. Was too close to it.
So what was the line made of? Was it a wick?
Gunpowder.
Oh, it was a line of gunpowder?
Yeah.
Your eyes light up when you speak about gunpowder. Gunpowder!
I had a long thing. And this was my, you see, the Chinese actually invented gunpowder. They had, and they just made fireworks, And so this is, I'm in a weatherman outfit. I don't know if you noticed, but I have a white outfit with a white... hard hat on, which is a weatherman outfit from those days. And this was an anti-weatherman statement of make fireworks, not guns. It's sort of like, it's sort of an attempt at a celebration instead of a
conflagration.
Yeah. I was really...
Make love, not war.
It was a make love, not war. It was make...
make fun, not. Be creative, don't be destructive. There. That kind of thing.
That's good information.
Yeah.
But I of course there was no notice that said that, and so that nobody ever. But I love this photograph because it
across.
It just went up the cross, and then these girls started dancing around. It was lovely. That was all spontaneous. Yeah, because at that point, these were probably flaming. After that, these were probably still flaming in different colors. And then that's what the inspired the people to dance around them, you see, because they became sort of a fire, fireplace, what do you call it? Mm-hmm. Campfires, mm-hmm. colored campfires on the street. Look at all the flute players. So this was in conjunction with the flute players, because obviously you can see that the flute players have come out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the flute players came out, and then the dancers and the fire. It actually worked very well mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. It wasn't.
Yeah, because it was the. I think it was the finale of the opening night.
And yeah.
Everybody was already in the mood.
Yeah.
They all had their flutes.
And it was very nice because, you see, talking about public art, we brought it right out to the street. And half of the audience out here just bumped into us.
We're just walking
they
by.
They were just walking by. There were a certain amount of people who had come, and I think a certain amount who had just bumped into us.
Well, there was a theater next door, and I think it probably came out about the same time. It was a studio theater. Do you remember?
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was right next door to the gallery.
Oh, right. Yeah, because there's a couple sort of looking surprised, and there's other people that are just right in it. But then again, I found with some of these, a lot of these happenings when we were young, is that with enough energy, everybody just joined in. Now, this is Mariko Kayuka.
And her younger sister that you're working with in front of her.
Very good, of course. That's exactly who that is. That's amazing. I'm so happy you found that. I love it when we find people in here that we know, you know. It's like, it really is forensic science, right? Evidence. So that's Mariko.
And whatever her name is
and
now.
Fumiko.
Fumiko, yeah. I keep forgetting that. Though.
Kayuka.